you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. What you're about to hear is part two of The Isle of the Lost by Kevin Valbenesi. If you haven't heard part one, I recommend going back and starting with that first. Today is something of a double feature. At the end of this show, keep your headphones on because another show will quickly follow. Our patrons contributed 66 different world ideas, which we boiled down to six and finally to one. And that one is the world the story is set in. So stay tuned after the show to hear that. A quick shout out to our new top tier members in Patreon, our agents and guides, Justin Wood, Sophie Pullard, G, Mark T. Clark Sr., Leslie Sauvish, and Liam Huntsman. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Your generosity is absolutely heartwarming. And thank you to everyone else who joined recently. I've had to limit our shoutouts to just our top tiers because we are getting flooded with new members right now, and I just want you to know I really appreciate each and every one of you, and I especially enjoy it when you add to the conversation. Let's do more of that. We have an awesome community. Now, for today's show, a quick recap. It's the 19th century. You're in the Black Sea region, where a massive earthquake belched up a mysterious island littered with ancient ruins from some unknown civilization. Archaeologists from around the world have descended, and the competition to reveal the island's mysteries is fierce. You made a discovery, followed by the click of a gun. Let's find out what happens next in part two of The Isle of the Lost by Kevin Valbenesi.
The earth has a heartbeat. You can hear it. Not a soul has made a sound since those sharp words violated the supreme silence in the cavern. You're all there, frozen in the dark, looking ghoulish in the faint glow of your dying lanterns. It's so silent. You can hear the rumbling of the earth beneath your feet and all around you. It's as if the earth is consciously trying to burst the walls and flood this unnatural cavity so deep in its bowels. Your captor, the German researcher in a dark suit, steps forward with Turkish soldiers following closely behind, all of them pointing the muzzles of their guns right in your face. You allow yourself to be forced to the ground, uttering not even a grunt as your face is pressed against the cold stone floor. One of the soldiers checks your pockets while another empties your satchel out. You wait for the clatter of your gun against the stone, but it never comes. The secret compartment held. You're hauled up and punched in the gut by one of the soldiers. You gasp for air. Dr. Cromwell falls to the floor next to you, and he eats the boot of a Turkish soldier as he struggles, clawing to get back to the case he was so recently fawning over. Finally, he's struck with the butt of a rifle, and this knocks him out cold. You instinctively try to check on him, but you're clocked with a hard right for your troubles.
English Boers, mind yourselves. You are trespassing on hallowed ground.
The German researcher pockets his pistol just as two more Turkish soldiers approach, rifles slung over their shoulders and lanterns in hand.
Now then, let's see what's been hiding here since Adam and Eve were first cast out of the garden.
Taking a lantern from one of the soldiers, the German researcher wastes no time leaning over the case, holding the light mere inches from its surface. He startles and falls back. You catch a glimpse of his contorted face, every shocked line made deeper by the intense shadows cast by the lanterns.
Impossible!
The German researcher gets back to his feet with the assistance of a Turk, and he inches forward once more, dangling his lantern out like a baited line over piranha-infested waters. When he fixes his eyes on the source of his surprise, his body is racked with convulsions. A wheezing laugh slips out from between his lips and resounds like the chatter of 1,000 imps in that reverberant chamber.
Hattusa and Knossos are nothing now.
Mere mounds of dirt compared to this marvelous place. Those who fawned over the dust of Agamemnon's bones will marvel at what we've uncovered here. You strain to get a better look, but you can't quite make out what's inside. You're still not sure if you want to know, and yet you lean forward.
Come.
Come and see for yourself. The Turkish soldiers drag you forward, one excruciating inch after another. Once more, you are on the verge of discovery, and it sends your nervous system into overdrive. Finally, you see it. You see the impossible contents of the case, and like all others who have gazed upon it recently, you lose control of yourself. Your legs give out, and you slip from the grasp of your captors, crashing against the lid of the case. You open your eyes and wipe away the blood which has spilled from your nose, clearing away the crimson obstruction from the transparent lid to find the aspect of a young man deep in repose. This is no mummy or pile of bones, but a flesh and blood adolescent, submerged in a milky liquid, wearing an expression of utter, serene repose. This young man looks like he just left the shores of Trabzon or Lemnos. He's Mediterranean, but you can't quite decide if he's of European or Levantine descent. His hair is reddish-brown, his skin is of an olive cast. The contours of his face are sharp, and looking down at the rest of his body, swaddled in dark blue robes, you get the impression that he was a fit specimen in his time.
Wonderful, isn't he? A remnant of the antediluvian age.
The German researcher tries to pry the case open, but he finds the lid fastened tight by some unseen mechanism. Two Turks join him in the effort, but to no avail.
Don't waste your time. This one's stuck.
The German marches about, inspecting the other cases, which you now know might hold the perfectly preserved remains of the ancient people. He tries every lid he comes across, but finds his efforts frustrated at every attempt. He continues his search for any case which might pop open, searching dozens, receding further into the darkness as he goes, until he is just a pinprick of light. A groan from nearby brings relief as Cromwell stirs. A Turk presses his foot into the old man's chest, keeping him pinned. Your eyes fix themselves on your satchel, just a few feet away. You wonder if you could shake off your captors long enough to seize your pistol and make quick work of them. But looking around at the handful of soldiers and the bobbing light of the German in the distance, you lose courage in an instant.
Bring the young one, right now.
You're pulled forward right away and dragged ahead, passing by one case after another. Feel the grip of the soldiers loosen a little as they comprehend the multitude who surround you in that eon-dead crypt. Still, these hardened men have their orders, and so they don't give you sufficient slack to break free. You're standing in front of the manic-looking German in a minute, and the reason for his ghoulish grin. There's another case here, quite distinct from the others. This one is stood upright on a low plinth, held in place by gold braces in the shape of olive branches. The edges of the case are lined with the strange hieroglyphics you encountered before, and the top is crowned with an eye reminiscent of the eye of Horus. The case is filled with that milky fluid, and it holds the form of a striking woman in white, adorned more lavishly than any Parisian of La Belle Époque. Her robes are long, flowing and accentuated with long strips of purple fabric. Her strawberry blonde hair is crowned with a golden wreath of cypress leaves. She must have been their priestess. Have you ever seen such a divine creature? The German kneels before the case, running his hands along the golden braces. With a tug, he pulls one back, and it seems to lock in place away from the case. He does likewise with the rest, and soon the case stands free on the plinth. Now then, I take it you English know something of this dead language. I should very much like to know what this all says. The German pulls out his pistol and points it at you. Tell me now if you can translate it. Tell me, or I will bury you and the old man here with the rest of these corpses. You put your hands up and nod slowly. The German gestures to the nearby soldiers. Take them and confine them to their tent. He turns back to you. I will send rubbings. You'll have until midnight to decipher them. I will shoot one of you for every hour that you take after that. Before you can say anything, you're struck from behind by the butt of a rifle, blacking out before your face collides with the cold, dark floor. You wake up under the dull tarp of the tent, laying on a dusty pile of clothes. Your ears are ringing, then a light touch to the back of your head finds moisture. You're bleeding, and just getting to your feet is a Herculean labor. You hear footsteps, and the next thing you know, both your arms are seized. You flail about, losing your balance, dropping back down to the floor. Fine. Get up on your own. You're too heavy for my dainty little hands, anyway. You look up and find Parker and Digby standing over you, looking like they got quite the licking themselves. You reach out, and Parker reluctantly grabs your hand, heaving you up. You touch the back of your head again, still bloody. Oh, they did a number on you too, huh? Oh, you got trampled by the lot of them. I took a licking too. Used me for boxing practice, Digby says, lifting his shirt to reveal a blue and black patchwork on his gut. You can't look, and in turning away, you glance around the room. It's readily apparent that there's only three of you. Where's Dr. Cromwell? Haven't seen him since he went down with you. Do you think they killed him? He said he'd let us live if we translated for him. Who? The German head researcher. Ah, Dr. Reinhardt. Probably shot Cromwell. Those two have been trading papers and harsh letters for years now. And we ran off with some statues last year that he fancied for the Pergamon Museum. Parker goes to the entrance of the tent and pulls back the flaps a little. What in John Christ's good name are they doing? You stand behind Parker and peer over his shoulder. A battalion of Turkish soldiers pull the case holding the priestess in an improvised sled. They drag it along with great difficulty while German researchers supervise at a distance. What did you find down there? Digby nearly crumples you over as he strains to get a better look. Parker bolts back, knocking you and Digby into the nearby table. Moments later, a Turkish soldier enters the room with a leather folio in hand. Without a word, the soldier tosses the folio to the ground and walks out. You kneel down and scoop up the folio, collecting the few loose sheets that flew out. They're all charcoal rubbings, probably from the priestess's case. No context, no pagination, just an anomalous collection of symbols. A ticking time bomb. Parker, what time is it? Parker pulls out his pocket watch and, after a quick glance, snaps it shut. 9? Wait. You empty out the contents of the folio onto the table and try to make heads or tails of them. It's apparent that whoever took the impressions at least took the time to do so in a measured manner. All the pieces preserve the shape of the case, which means that you're immediately able to sort out the corners, providing at least some framework to proceed forward. The rest requires a bit more thought. The long pieces could go anywhere, their orientation depending entirely on that of the hieroglyphs. Was the dolphin symbol horizontal, or was it vertical? In which direction did the horse symbol face? All you have is your memory, and after a bit of trial and error, you have a rough outline of the case laid out on the table. Whether it's truly right or wrong is beyond you. Well done, Digby says. He walks the length of the table, trying to make heads or tails of the characters. Well, what does it say? I don't know, you snap back. So how did you open the door? I touched something by accident. Digby looks like a man on the receiving end of a summons or a letter of condolences. He puts his hands down under the table, his knuckles pressing against the wood. I thought we hired an expert. It's not an exact science. This is an unknown language. You should know that this would be a labor of months, maybe years. We just got lucky, and that moved up the timetable. Hey, what's the rush anyway? This isn't our show anymore. The Germans and the Turks are running things now. That Dr. Reinhardt gave us until midnight to decipher these glyphs, or we'll all be shot. The color drains from Digby's face. Parker sticks his head out of the tent, but withdraws quickly. While I wish you told me that first, I don't think it'll make a difference. We're not going to just waltz by the army out there. Listen, you say. I can't solve this. Not in 3 hours. But we do have 3 hours to figure out how we can get the hell out of here. You pick up a nearby pencil and turn over one of the sheets. I have an idea. It's not a good idea. But if you guys will indulge me, I think I can at least buy us some time. Linguistics is an arcane art, and when applied to languages which were forgotten before the first stones of Memphis were laid, it might appear that a practitioner of this craft is more magus than scientist. You've done everything you can to make the apparent decipherment of this hieroglyphic language look inscrutable, and as Dr. Reinhardt leans over your shoulder, you pray that the fabricated translation you've laid out and its accompanying notes are convincing. He compares glyphs and your scribbled jargon, trying to make sense of things, work them out for himself. You believe this is accurate? He asks without so much as a look at you. How can you be certain of anything? An exact translation is impossible, but we can capture the spirit of the inscription. I knew enough to open the vault, after all. Digby and Parker, who stand between two armed Turkish soldiers, nod in agreement. Reinhardt smirks and claps. He pulls a cigar from his jacket, strikes a match against the table, and lights it. Your talent is wasted here. Someone of your genius should be working at the Pergamon Museum. Not with that crackpot. That's very kind of you. I should very much like to see Berlin. Let's start with sunrise tomorrow. That is a more attainable goal. Reinhardt picks up the sheet with the translation scribbled on it, blows perfect smoke rings, and straightens the page out. Here I sleep with my chosen few, enjoying the everlasting dream in the unending fields beyond. Do not wake me until the gods again walk upon the earth. Wunderbar. Reinhardt signals to the Turkish soldiers, and in an instant, you're all seized and dragged outside of the tent. Wait, what about Dr. Cromwell? Why not? The good doctor is keeping that mysterious lady company. His expertise might yet save him, as yours have here. Reinhardt enjoys his cigar as he strolls away. You, meanwhile, struggle against the grasp of your captors. They might be taking you to your sleeping quarters, but you seriously doubt it. The likely outcome is that you'll be given two to the back of the head and dumped in the Black Sea. But, luckily, You're led to one of the ancient homes and tossed inside. The soldier is waiting there, standing next to a pile of filthy rags and stale food. The Turk mumbles something under his breath and then steps outside to watch the door. You all settle into your accommodations, laying out the filthy sheets and inspecting the food.
Brilliant work. 3 hours and all you managed was a pat on the back and some moldy bread,
Digby whispers.
I'd rather they shoot me, to be honest.
It's the best we could manage. You bought it, and that bought us another day. Hopefully. You look around the room and find that this is a one-story home with a few side rooms. No obvious way out presents itself. Tomorrow I'm going to try and convince the Germans to let us decipher hieroglyphs around the island. Then we just wait for the guards to get lazy, and we slip away, grab a boat, and go.
Do either of you know how to sail?
Parker sits with his arms crossed, a piece of stale bread in hand. He points at you, and you shake your head. He points at Digby and receives the same answer in the negative.
That makes three of us. But I'll be damned if we don't try.
We're dead for sure either way. Nobody says another word. You all lay down on your pitiful excuses for mattresses and pick the mold from your measly morsels. The circumstances here are dire, and as you turn over the monumental task of engineering your escape, you have to concede that death is the likely outcome. Reinhardt will demand that you teach him the method of translating the hieroglyphs, and when he realizes that you've deceived him, you'll be shot. There's no way he can allow anyone to leave the island either. This was an international effort, and anyone returning to inform their governments of a German coup would be a suitable casus belli for these bellicose states. No, your deaths will be made to look like an accident. A cavern will be collapsed on you, and perhaps one or two Germans will be sacrificed to help sell the story. You came here, purposely avoiding the peril of going out in the field, as they say back in your time. This was supposed to be an exercise in curiosity and discovery. But now, you have to fight for your life. And not just yours. You may not know Parker, Digby, or Dr. Cromwell very well, but they are people. They have lives worth protecting. They didn't sign up for this either. If only you had your pistol, but you see nothing of your satchel since you were unceremoniously knocked out in the cavern. But even then, what could you manage against trained soldiers? Are you really going to shoot your way to a boat and then the Turkish shore? Perhaps you just need more time. A good night's sleep may offer clarity and guidance. But you'll have no such thing tonight. The moment you try to close your eyes, there's the resounding, unmistakable crack of gunfire. It's one shot. One lonely shot in the night. And then another. And another. You hear soldiers rushing through the city and panicked cries filling the air. The commotion builds, and soon the crackle of gunfire is omnipresent, happening in every direction. The soldier guarding the door lifts up his rifle and runs off, answering the call for help from his superiors. Parker and Digby don't even wait for you to say a peep. They rush out of the home, stopping only as the sound of more gunfire erupts from nearby. You rush out and throw yourself onto the hapless researchers, knocking them down. You put all of your weight on them to keep them down.
Are you crazy? Get off of us!
Digby tries to press himself up, but he's no strong man. He collapses back to the ground. Stay low, or you'll catch a bullet. You roll off of them and crouch down. You inch forward and poke your head out from behind a pile of rubble. You can see the temple from here, and it's there that the Turkish soldiers congregate, firing their rifles into the gaping entrance. You're confused, there's little time to dwell on it. They're massing at the temple. I think we can make a run for it. You turn to Digby and Parker. The German base, where is it?
It's near the entrance to the city, in an old hall or something.
Good. I'll go and find Cromwell, if he's still alive. You two make for the dock. Stow away on a ship, and I'll join you as soon as I have the old man. You don't linger, because Digby and Parker might easily talk you out of your ludicrous plan. But this is the best you can do, and the odds either way aren't that great. You stay low, navigating the streets of this unnamed city, passing by the empty homes of those perfectly preserved ancients. You rush around this corner and that, trying to remember the way you came, and trying to avoid the battalions of Turkish soldiers who rush out, guns held high, on their way to the temple. You hurl yourself into an empty home to avoid a particularly large group of soldiers, backed up by Germans wielding pistols. They come down one of the wider streets, heading in the direction of the temple. You realize that the building you're in has several holes in the walls, and will not hide you. So you frantically search around, entering this room and that for cover, find that they are all exposed. You rush into another room and find a simple stone staircase. You rush up and find yourself on a relatively intact second floor. You still keep low, and minding your footing, you inch toward an open window, watching as the soldiers and researchers pass by. You can even see the temple from here, and the battle which continues to rage around the Acropolis. Several Turkish soldiers are down now, and not moving. Who on earth could be creating such trouble for the considerable military presence on the island? The French were all researchers, and you have no doubt they were also arrested, or worse, once the Germans took over. The British contingent is you and your hapless colleagues. So, who then? A spear settles the matter for you. The ancient weapon flies out from the window of another structure and strikes one of the Turkish soldiers, impaling him. The rest of the soldiers close ranks, their rifles searching for the unseen assailant. From another building, you see shadowy figures stand up and hurl spears down into the enemy ranks. Gunfire erupts, and a stray shot nearly catches you, sending you scrambling back and down the stairs. You don't need to stick around. You squeeze through a hole in one of the walls and into a back alley. You catch a glimpse of another shadowy figure rushing by, spear in hand, but you're definitely not stopping to get a better look. You break away, sprinting for the largest building you can see at the edge of the city. As you cross the main street and rush up a stone staircase, you come across the corpses of several German researchers. They've all been speared through the chest, and the look on every face is one of utter disbelief. You struggle to keep the contents of your stomach down as you push on ahead into the German base, which is set up in this civilization's version of a basilica. You leap through the open door and find yourself in the chaotic aftermath of a struggle. The German base, which was set up more like a stateroom from Berlin, with luxury furniture, a radio, and even the remnants of a bar, is now little more than splintered wood and broken glass. There's not a soul here. The only thing which stands out here is the empty, upright case which once held the body of that mysterious woman from the cavern. The floor is wet, and the shattered glass is concentrated around the empty case. Your heart skips a beat, and you feel your legs give out from beneath you. In a moment, you're on the floor, your chest racked with heavy breathing. You gasp for air as if you're drowning under the impossible reality. You roll over, trying to crawl for the door, and that's when another disturbing sight greets you. Dr. Reinhardt's body lays crumpled over a couch. his eyes wide and glassy, and his throat leaking crimson blood. His arms and legs are splayed out in such an unnatural manner that it appears as if he was dropped from a great height. You recoil from the corpse, and finding strength once more, you rush out of the building. Stumbling out, you turn to gaze upon the temple, where the battle has all but died down. You see Turkish soldiers disappearing into the building, guns leveled. Whoever they're fighting, they must have them on the run. You don't know if you should be relieved or horrified. Still, this at least makes the run to the dock a simpler affair. Or at least, it would, if you didn't see a familiar face scurrying into the temple on the heels of the Turks. Dr. Cromwell, very much alive and well, creeps into the temple, holding little more than a lantern and what looks like a pistol in his other hand. Your heart sinks, and you feel a weight in your gut. You could make a break for the dock now, but having witnessed the doctor hurl himself into the dark and dangerous bowels of the temple, you find yourself at a crossroads. You risk everything for the old man, or will you take your chances on the Black Sea? In either case, you need to decide now. It's the shadowy corridors beneath the earth, or the turbulent, inky waters of the Pontus Euxinus. Take a deep breath. You center yourself. And setting one foot in front of the other, you rush off, committing yourself to a selfish and foolhardy gamble.
What you just heard was The Isle of the Lost, Part 2, written and produced by the prose poet Kevin Valbanese, and with music by Cryo Chamber. Don't go away! Today you get a double feature. There's a whole other, fully produced story coming at you fast. Here's the backstory. Our Patreon community has gotten to a good size, and I wanted to do something fun with them, so I asked them to slam me with all their best ideas for Twilight History's worlds. They gave me 66 ideas. As voting was going on, 3 ideas started to take off. The race was really tight. I mean, really, it just came down to a few votes, so it was kind of exciting. In third place, with 19% of the votes, was an idea by Sam McDonald. Remember Sam? He wrote True Aztec, which I think we might re-release sometime soon. His idea was that Mars never lost its magnetic field, so the whole planet was habitable. I was playing with the idea and was starting to build out a story where an Elon Musk-style colony clears out some jungle for pods on this planet brimming with life. Everything is fresh and exciting to the explorers, and dangerous. Because Mars has a third of Earth's gravity, life forms are able to grow much larger. Imagine jungles filled with absolutely huge exotic organic structures that make the colonists feel tiny. Now imagine the predators that prowl these alien jungles. I have this image of colonists building walls and gun towers with some kind of Godzilla-sized creature booming around in the dark jungle. Anyways, cool idea. It came close. It rose through 66 ideas, but ended up just a handful shy. The patrons have voted. In second place, with 23% of the vote, just a couple votes more than the Mars idea, involves explorers discovering a lost Phoenician colony. This idea was offered up by our patron Zachary Zeitgart. The way he describes it, the Vikings' journey to the New World, where they discover a thriving and powerful Phoenician civilization. Now you probably remember I spent a lot of time building out a show called The Black Scourge, which is kind of like this, with Vikings in the New World and hints of ancient civilization. so I didn't want to mirror that experience. But I really liked the idea of a lost Phoenician colony so much that I added it to the list anyways. If it won, I could always play around with it. Imagine, for instance, survivors of Carthage escaping the fall of their city and traveling down the Ivory Coast following Hanno's travels. They build a new civilization in the Congo, far from Rome's reach. Shout out to our patron John Higgins for sparking that tangent. Or imagine they go even further. They travel past Africa and get turned around in the Indian Ocean until eventually they arrive on the far side of the world, in the land of the Maori. They share culture and interbreed with the Maori, combining the two cultures into one. Imagine Maori warriors with iron armor carving out a Polynesian empire with triremes. Picture the temples and libraries in bustling classical Maori cities nestled in the beautiful landscapes from Lord of the Rings with their mountains and waterfalls. I don't know, could have been fun. But alas, we'll have to put that idea into the slush pile, as our patrons voted this next idea even higher. Coming in first place and commanding 27% of all the votes cast, just a couple votes more than the Phoenician idea, is... wait for it. Nah, you'll just have to find out. Thank you to Ryan Lazarus for your great idea. Here it is, painted through audio. Enjoy. In 1908, an asteroid slammed into the remote Siberian wilderness. The massive explosion flattened 80 million trees. Huge earthquakes rippled out from the epicenter, and shockwaves broke windows hundreds of kilometers away. As these shockwaves spread across the globe, they were felt in Denmark, London, and Washington, D.C. The fires caused by the impact were so great that the skies in Scotland and Sweden glowed eerily at night. This was the Tunguska event. The explosion was measured in megatons. It caused a mushroom cloud that broke the stratosphere, an iconic image not repeated until the Cold War, many years into the future. But the Tunguska event happened during an age when the secret of flight had only just been unlocked, and the most deadly weapon was the Maxim gun. The point of departure in this world was millions of years in the past, and deep in interplanetary space, one of Jupiter's gravitational waves nudged the asteroid ever so slightly off course. This slight alteration would result in the disaster being named in this world, the Paris event. Please put on your costume now while I finish your orientation. You will materialize in this world at the lip of the crater the day after the event. The ground will still be hot to the touch. The dust particles will dim the summer sun. Have a look at the blast zone if you want, and then I'd advise you to quickly move on. As you walk away from the crater, the devastation will evolve from evaporated remains of a once flourishing civilization to its shattered and scorched artifacts, and finally to its broken structures, where battered survivors scrape the earth for their loved ones. The devastation is vast, with over 2,000 square kilometers within the kill zone, and even towns and cities hundreds of kilometers away will show signs of damage. The world is slowly waking up to this disaster. Thousands of volunteers will flood in, nurses, doctors, people with shovels and baskets of food. The world will cry for Paris. A Europe at once aflame with nationalism, arms races, and suspicion will discover a common language of heartache and compassion. This world has never experienced such shock, and yet this very grief will unite the world. Let's have a look at you. Very nice. I've always liked the Edwardian style. Active, individualistic, a little more gender fluid and sporty than the suffocating Victorian getup. You look like you could have stepped right out of some antique sports car, although certainly such things were novelties at this time. But don't feel too proud. I'm sure your outfit will quickly become drenched in mud and blood in this world. Please, step on the platform, and we'll get you on your way. You may feel dizzy, and you might not remember where you are at first. Don't worry, this will pass. A parting word. You have requested a very sad world, and we've put you in the very heart of that sadness. You will see things that will sear themselves into your memory. When you requested this world, you were probably thinking more about the geopolitical consequences. What would the great powers do? But the reality is, when you're traveling on foot, your experiences are much more intimate. Good luck. You rise from the scorching earth. You're covered in soot, and you cough uncontrollably. You turn over and cough into the ground, but the earth is so hot it burns your hands. Your clothes feel as though they must be on fire. You throw off your blazer, feeling fire in your body. You roll up your sleeves. Your skin is red and blistered. Your face is painful and hurts to the touch. You're overcome by another coughing fit. You can't get the soot out of your lungs. You wipe the spit off your chin. Your phlegm is black. You're so thirsty. You stand and look around. The world looks like hell. The sky is a murky fog of floating soot. The ground is blackened mud. There are glowing red cracks in the mud, as though you were standing on the magma blood of some giant demon. You crawl your way up the side of a hill, hoping for cleaner air. You almost stumble over a cliff. Below you is a vast sea of glowing magma. Where are you? Did you die? Is this hell? You're so thirsty. You climb back down the hill, but where will you go? You can't see more than 20 feet in front of you. You come to a beach. Black water is lapping the darkened soil. Is this the River Styx? You fall to your knees and reach your hands in. It's bath warm. It's also filled with black soot. Thirsty, but this water doesn't look clean. You wade into the water. About waist deep, you feel a slight current, but the water is still black. Maybe it is the Styx. There's a light, a small yellow light out in the fog. You see a black shape heading towards you. There's a horn. It's a ship. "Help! Over here!" you say. And catch yourself. Could that be the boatman Charon come to take you away to the land of death? You shake the thought off. Help! Are you okay? Says the man, putting a blanket over your shoulders. He's wearing a scarf over his nose and mouth, but his eyes reveal horror. His hands shake. Were you this when it happened? He speaks some language you can't name, yet you understand his words. I don't know. I just woke up. I'm so confused. Well, you're okay now. I'm so thirsty. Of course. Let me get you some water. He uncorks a flask and hands it to you. The water is so sweet and refreshing. Was there anyone else out there with you? Shake your head and take another long draw from the flask. It's unbelievable. Absolutely unspeakable. Terrible. How could this? He trails off, gazes out at the soot-filled sky. What is this place? The man looks down at you, confused by your question. Then his face shows sympathy. You must be shocked out of your wits. Can't believe you survived out here, this close to the impact. I haven't found anyone else this far out. Impact? Did you say impact? Yes. Comet hit Paris. You sit upright. Memories flood back. The Twilight histories. Yes. You booked a split. Ah, I see you understand. You should rest. You must be exhausted. Wait. What is this water we're in? This, my friend, is the Seine. It now flows around the crater. And to think it once flowed past the Louvre and Notre Dame, all of Paris, now just dust. His eyes tear up. Hours pass, the fog dissipates, and you begin to see ruins rising from the buckled ground. Everything leans away from the impact. Stunned people walk about here and there. The captain calls down to them, inviting anyone to join who needs a ride to the hospital tents. It doesn't take long for the small fishing boat to fill with wounded. Their cries are as pitiful as their injuries are horrifying. A man without a face, a mother picking maggots from her child's blackened skin, clothes in tatters, limbs crushed by fallen stone. The captain just shakes his head and sighs heavily at these sights. The small coal-powered fishing boat chugs up to the pier where hospital tents are being set up by soldiers in the fields outside a small, shattered village. Nurses and doctors are attending row upon row of injured lying out in the open. How do you feel? The captain says. It's a bloody miracle, you being so close to that impact. I just can't get over it. I feel fine, just a little stunned. He gives you a quick up and down, then nods with approval. You feel up for helping? Yes, of course. I was going to ask what I could do. Well, there are a couple options for you. I know they need all the help they can get here. Oh, like what? Any number of things. Changing dressings, carrying water, putting up new tents. They're desperate for help. Just look at them. Look at all these poor wretches lying out in the open with no one to care for them. You see a nurse washing bandages in the river. She's drenched in blood and her gown is red. She would be pretty in a different setting. She looks up. Meet her eyes. The terror in her eyes hits you like an electric shock. You said there were two options? What's the other option? You could come along with me if you want. I'm going back in for more survivors. It's up to you. What do you think? So, what will you do? Will you volunteer alongside the nurse at the hospital tents, or go back into the hellish death zone to find more survivors with the fishermen? You get to choose. If you're already a member of our Patreon community, head on over to twilighthistories.com and follow the Patreon link to our page where you can vote for your choice. If you're not a patron of the show yet, you can sign up easily enough. Again, by visiting twilighthistories.com and following the link to Patreon. I have no idea what will happen next, so I'm so excited to find out how our patrons will vote. But please hurry, because you only have until Thursday to vote. I have to write and produce the next part of the story, and we're on a very tight time frame. See you on the inside. I'm Jordan Harbour. Until next time, stay safe and take care.